Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. It is the Philosopher's Stone podcast. If you weren't sure what you're listening to, it is that. And I for one, am really glad to be back. Okay. Glad to be back in the booth, which is just a room in my house. How are you doing, Sam? Sam, back in T-Dot after a short but effective visit to his hometown.
Short but effective. Yes. The old in out, as we say.
Not making any promises, not breaking any hearts. In and out, real quick. Quick and dirty. Or quick, clean and quick, maybe would be a better way to describe that. We were both attending a good friend's wedding. Congratulations to Jordan and Allie Swetlikoff. Hang on a second. I thought that was going to be people cheering. Your marriage is not a joke, okay? And was happy to be a part of it.
Are we speaking directly to the bride and groom right now?
Yes, we are.
I also enjoyed the wedding a lot. It was a lot of fun to see everybody and yes. to celebrate their love or your love, whoever we're talking to. Yeah, get it.
Yeah, it was a good time. Weddings are always a blast. Long time with the wedding party photos I found, though.
Well, there's so many different combinations of people. There's like, how many people are in the wedding party? Like 10?
Yeah.
Right? It's like 100 different combinations.
Why do they have to get every combination? Here's the thing about wedding photos. You look at them 5 times over the next 30 years, and then it's not till you're old that you start looking at them more often. That's what I think.
Oh, yeah. Take the trip down memory lane.
Yeah.
Yeah. The trip down memory lane, I think, gets sweeter the older the memory is, right?
Yeah, of course.
Like, yeah.
Or how you felt about life at the time when the photo was taken can bring you back to, you know, nostalgia. I think nostalgia is one of those weird emotions where it's a very hard mix of positive and negative, I feel like, you know, which you would think would leave it as a neutral feeling, but it's definitely not a neutral feeling.
Yes, because you can never go back.
Yes. It's the fondness of the memories that happen, but the sadness that they're over.
True. I think it's good to have some good memories, but
you think so?
Here we are.
Holy shit.
Let me cook.
We're getting right into the deep philosophy here.
All right. Let me land this plane.
Go off, King. Go off.
Right. So, it's good to have some good memories, but you shouldn't be fooled by nostalgia into wanting to go back to your past or thinking that your past is better than your present just because the memories feel good, because memories are not necessarily accurate.
Yes. And also, chances are, given enough time, you're going to be feeling nostalgic about the current place you're in life. So if you're always thinking about the past and being like, oh, things were better back then, well, you'd be surprised in 20 years you're going to be thinking about right now and with a nostalgic lens. So don't take for granted the memories you're making in your current life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like right now I'm, you know, in an unair-conditioned apartment. It's almost 30 degrees out. There's a guy in the building across from me screaming out his window about the government.
Mm.
But I know I'm going to look back on this and I think, wow, what a crazy fun time that was.
You're going to miss that. You're going to miss that unhinged man screaming about the government. And you know what? He'll probably be right. Everything he's screaming will turn out to be true.
He seems like a nice guy. Like he's just trying to warn us all. Like three in the morning is pushing it in my head.
Can you keep your conspiracy blithering to daylight hours, please, sir?
Yeah.
I will say I definitely feel more nostalgia for the 90s than I do for the, you know, 2010s and up till 2020. You know what I mean? Like the 90s and the 2010s, I think those will always hold a uniquely nostalgic position in my mind, because that's back when you didn't have any adult problems. So the simplicity of life is something that I don't think you can really ever get back until maybe you're retired.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, the 90s were fun, right? No phones, really.
It can't be understated how awesome that really was to be able to live our childhoods with no screens besides, like, you watch one TV show a week type of thing.
Yeah, we were probably outliers because I didn't have cable. I don't think you would have had cable
either. No, we had rabbit ears.
Yeah,
right. If we wanted cable, we had to go up to Grandma and Grandpa's house. That was the thing. So I think that was a little ploy they had to get us up there all the time.
Very smart.
My family did not have, we had the rabbit ears, which would bring in two channels. And nice. I think for a while there, the only TV I watched was once a week, we would watch Malcolm in the Middle as a family. And that was the only TV we watched. The rest was spent outdoors doing stuff.
Malcolm in the Middle, Bryan Cranston.
Yep.
Amazing.
I mean, he was a genius back then and he's a genius now.
He is. Oh, yeah. We did not watch shows, but like every Friday we would do movie night and my dad would usually pick the movie and it would be some bizarre science fiction film.
I still remember the feeling I got when I look on the kitchen counter after getting home from school and seeing those two Blockbuster DVD packages. And I'd be like, oh shit, we got entertainment for the night.
Here we go.
And then I look at them and it's just so funny that it's like you go all the way to the video rental store, you pick a movie on a whim and you just have to deal with it if it's terrible.
Oh man. Yeah. I remember watching some really like cool classic science fiction films, like Logan's Run is a great one.
Never heard of it.
There's like a future society on Earth where they like live underground in like this sort of utopian society. It's like all young, beautiful people. Like everyone's having sex all the time.
And fuck yeah, dude.
It's just a big party. But the catch is when you turn 25, you die.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Leonardo DiCaprio was running it all along.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of The Living Underground. I've been watching, I don't know if I mentioned this last podcast, but I've been watching the show Fallout, which was based on...
Oh, yeah. I've played the video game Fallout 3.
Very popular series of video games. And
yeah, those are fun games.
The show is quite good. I was surprised.
Yeah.
I mean,
those are fun games.
I'm not familiar with the games as much. Like, I know what they are and I kind of know what the gist of them are, but I never played them myself. The show is, you know, it's like dark comedy, which I think is kind of the vibe the game was as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, it's a game about like trying to find a toilet that still has some water in it that you can drink from.
Is that really what it is?
it's like post-apocalyptic survival game, basically. Yes. So it's all about...
Well, that is definitely a theme in the show, is finding clean water, or at least it was for the first bit. I'll give the show, like, so far, it's definitely intriguing. I wouldn't say it's like a bang, like, fucking knocked it out of the park, but definitely worth watching if you're into dark comedies. And you'd probably enjoy it a lot. You'd probably really enjoy it if you played the video games. Like, I'm probably missing a ton of references and, like, you know, inside scoops that would make it a more enriching experience. Here, I will say this. The opening scene of that show is incredibly anxiety-inducing. Now, I did smoke a joint right before I watched it, but I've talked about it with other people that have seen it and they describe the same thing. Not wanting to give any spoilers, but definitely even if you don't watch the show, it's worth just watching that opening scene. So that's my rec for this week. The opening scene of episode 1 of Fallout.
All right, maybe I'll get a Prime subscription to watch that.
So back to everybody banging, but you die when you're 25. How long are these people actually like sexually active in the first place? Is that the only good thing about this place? Is that everybody can bang everyone? Because like that's definitely not worth dying at 25 for.
It's yeah, no, it's not just that. Like it's like a hedonistic population. Sorry. Oh, okay, I got the age wrong. It's 30. 30 years old.
30. Okay. Now we're talking.
But it's to prevent overpopulation, basically, because they live in a confined space underground.
How long? I mean, that's how long I think you would even find the hedonistic lifestyle attractive for. I mean, if we lived in a hedonistic society currently, do you think everybody would be happier or more fulfilled? Like, I don't think hedonism is like a very short term, you know, what would you say it?
Lifestyle,
I guess, as far as like it remaining satisfying. Maybe not for everybody, but.
Well, it depends how you live as a hedonist. So if you are hedonistic in a smart way, you will interpret hedonism to mean that good things in life are things that bring you pleasure, mm-hmm. and the bad things in life are the things that bring you pain. And so you'll try to, if you're a smart hedonist, you'll try to balance that out in Epicurean fashion, I guess, to have like a good balance of pleasures and pain so that you're not frustrated and bored all the time.
Well, I mean, don't people do that anyways? Like, isn't that kind of how people navigate life?
It like, is. Yeah.
You realize that, you know, short-term pleasures are often, you know, the chemical pleasures and the short-term pleasures are often, they come at a cost that, you know, the net positive goes down as you age.
Yeah, that's true. It is true. But you can be a hedonist without like just injecting heroin all day. Like you
yes,
could
but I would, if I met a hedonist that did not partake in orgies, I would not respect them as a hedonist. That's my thing.
Well, sure.
Call yourself a hedonist.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, look, you could be a hedonist and still take the orgies in moderation. Just maybe three or four a year, that kind of thing.
3 or 4 a year seems insane.
Every 3 months. You know,
I wonder what is, if you're in that lifestyle, if you're a hedonist or you're into group sex, what is like the average, how often is the gang getting together? You know what I mean?
Oh my God. And is it the same people every time? That would be weird.
I was reading a thread on Reddit and someone was describing something about orgies, and this person responded that they had known a group of people that were like, you would have like your core group that was very dedicated, and they like, and then you'd have people that came in that were just curious for like 1 or 2 sessions or whatever. I just can't imagine an orgy that was not more awkward than pleasurable.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's probably like, there's probably got a ice has to break a little bit at the start.
Yeah. It's probably there's a learning curve. You're not just going to be great at orgies on your first orgy. That's for sure.
Maybe they start with like a strip poker game or something, or like.
Oh,
strip.
I'm sure they have icebreakers.
Yeah, you got to have something like that.
Yeah. Now, do you have to like wear a name tag that like lists the things that you will or will not allow to enter your body?
Oh, that's so fun. I heard a comedian. Oh, I wish I could remember her name, but she did a bit about this because in like, I don't know if they have this in Kelowna, like a sex club. They have this in like Ottawa and Toronto.
No, I mean, like a nightclub that's meant to like where you're supposed to bang.
Yeah. It's like straight up. Like you go to this club to have sex and you wear different colored bracelets. But her joke, her joke was that there's like a green bracelet and a red bracelet.
Wow.
And
pulling a Donald Trump over there.
Yeah, and her joke was they need more colors than that.
Well, there was a movement back in the day.
More shades.
I remember back when, like, Avril Lavigne, Avril Lavigne.
Vaccine symptoms.
It's finally kicking in. Back in her day there, she was, like, wearing these kind of, like, wristbands. They're, like, not bands. They're, like, bracelets. And the thing was, is it was the same thing, that the color codes would, like, give you, tell others what you're open to sexually. There's a lot more than just two. But they would, like, divide it into, like, this person is looking for a blowjob and anal. So you would have corresponding wristbands. I don't know. I think that's a young man's game. But honestly, but actually, I would be surprised if it wasn't engaged in more by the elderly. You know what I mean? I think orgies are probably not as common amongst, you know, 20-year-olds as it is amongst 50-year-olds.
Sure, hope not.
Well, you would like to think that all the orgies are full of hot young people, right? But I think that the vast majority of orgies are probably populated by, you know, the freaks of that are in their 50s or 40s.
Yeah, I don't want to get FOMO. I mean, I would think that most, I would think that you're right. Most orgies are not, like, just supermodels and everything.
There's that famous sex club in Berlin, I think, that's, like, really hard to get into. It's got this, I forget the name, but it's, like, world famous. And it just looks like the exterior just looks like a warehouse. And there's, like, a strict dress code and, like, strict rules of, like, how you get in there. And, like, they take your phone away and they, like, you have to, like, lock in these special locks. And, like, I heard Mark Norman talking about going there with his wife and, it sounded like pretty awkward. He was talking about how he was, like, banging his wife and this some dude's just watching him, like, cranking his hog in the corner. It's like, that's the type of shit I don't think I could get around.
Ah, it's called the Kit Kat Club.
A Kit Kat Club.
Give me a break.
Break me off a piece of that. Big dick. Okay. Where's the Sex Club Berlin? I'm just going to type it into my Google. I don't care. I don't care what this does for my ads. Bahrain, it's called. Oh, Kit Kat Club. Fuck me. That's a different one.
There's multiple. Okay.
Okay, Bahrain. Bergain. If you look at the images of the front entrance, it looks literally like almost like an abandoned building, but you can just see a bunch of different colored lights. And it's got, let's see, 5 floors. And I think it gets more like the sexual, depravity gets more intense as you go up and up the floors. And, like, I think the top one's probably, like, basically illegal shit. What do you talk about in the line? I'm looking at pictures of people in line to get in. Like, do you be like, I want to see you when I get in there? Does everybody wear masks? Like,
I don't know. I would not. I don't think I could handle that.
No. Maybe as a younger man, I could have forced myself to jump in there once, but I don't think that's would have been my style.
No, I find it very, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it'd be easy. Maybe it'd be weird. We'll never know because I'm never going to go.
Ah, Sam, you should do it. You're a single man in the prime of his life. Go fly to Berlin. Get in there.
I don't even speak German. Don't you have to speak German, probably?
No, not in Berlin. Everybody speaks English there. Or can speak English.
I couldn't possibly. That's too far.
Yeah.
I'm not that hedonistic.
They should the wristbands should be like straight gay bi, right? So you're not getting like harassed by people that you're not going to give a chance. You know what I mean?
Oh, instead of they should be for your orientation rather than for like what acts you want to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
or maybe one on one wrist, your orientation, and then you get the all the acts on your right wrist. So you, and then certain rooms you can only get in if you have the right combination. I don't know.
Yeah, And you need a jersey with your number on it.
Yes. And, exactly. And there's also announcers in a booth that are commentating on everything happening.
Calling the game.
Oh, looks like we got a rookie entering the red room. This can't be good. This boy's way over his head, Carl.
Yeah.
Did you have a plan for this episode, or are we just going to talk about orgies?
I thought we could try and put the pieces of concepts back together again.
Oh, okay.
Just like a very quick.
Okay, do it. Just rip the Band-Aid off.
Okay, so we were talking about Terrence Howard and whether he could have had like these concepts when he was a baby in the womb. Because he was saying like he remembers being in the womb and he remembers thinking like, okay, don't forget this. Got to remember this.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
That was so funny as I read somewhere about how he claims all these patents he has. Oh. He says he has like 600 patents.
Holy shit.
But
for the Iron Man suit?
Yeah. But like anyone can file a patent about a bad idea. That's the thing. It's like whatever patent you have for under your name could be a completely unusable piece of garbage. So like having a large number of patents just means you think you have a lot of good ideas.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, he's definitely a narcissist or a delusional. Like, I feel like he's a narcissist.
Yeah, it could be. Definitely could be. If, yeah. But I thought, okay, we should see, like, is it possible that maybe he could have some of these concepts even as a baby? Is that possible? And so then we were talking like, can you have concepts without language? Like what comes first, concepts or language?
Right. The riveting theories.
Yeah. And so I wanted to, so I did some more research so we can clear it up a little bit and put the nail in the proverbial coffin.
Okay.
Of Terrence Howard. It's baby world.
Baby genius. Terrence Howard, baby genius.
Yeah, so there's two main branches that you can go with concepts. One branch, Terrence Howard is out of his mind and he's wrong. And the other branch, maybe it might be possible.
Okay. And
he's just really special.
Okay.
So here's the one that would say that he's wrong. And this is called the representational theory of concepts. So this is the theory that your brain has like its own non-linguistic internal language, kind of.
Okay.
And the content of this language are called representations. Or ideas is another word for them.
Right.
And these are, and you think about these things there, you don't have words for them, but they're like representations that you can combine in like a kind of like a language.
Right.
So one example, you could say, okay, birds have been observed. They're birds that, store food in caches in the winter. And they seem to have a whole process by which they prioritize caches of food that are more likely to go bad sooner. So they use those caches first. Some of them are like, if they see that another bird is watching them when they put some stuff in their cache, they will also make sure to pick that cache up first as well in case the other bird steals it.
Oh.
So you might think, so according to the representational theory, these birds may be working with some kind of like primitive representations of their caches and like the quality of the food and the cash, which one to get first. And they can do all that without language, but they have to have, but to explain how they think about these things, they have to have some kind of representations or ideas, even if those aren't words.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, and that implies that there's kind of like this innate representational stuff. But as we have seen with like human behavior and cognition and genetics, nothing is ever explained just in terms of some innate gene genetic thing. Everything is a combination of genes and the environment and that stuff coming together.
Mm-hmm.
So you only get these representations through being in the environment and encountering stuff that, you know, you need to use your cognitive abilities for. Like if these birds were just raised and never had to like do any caches, if they were just fed stuff,
yeah,
you'd never really be able to know if they were using representations.
So do you think they would have to have had another bird steal their cache before they would come up with this idea of eating the cache first that another bird saw them store?
Yeah, possibly. But it is interesting that in the study, it was the birds that had stolen from other birds that were the most careful about other birds seeing them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So they were like, if I'm capable of this, other birds are capable of this. They're projecting. That's what they were doing. Projecting their own flaws on other birds.
Yeah, they think it's a dog-eat-dog world because they themselves are stealing stuff. So they think
morally corrupt.
Yeah. So that's like an empiricist view of concepts. We need to get them from not just from what we have in our brain, our ability to work with representations, but we also need stimulus from the environment. Right. So under that heading, could Terrence Howard have gotten the concepts of memory and forgetting, not just as words, or not just as concepts, but like as actual words in the womb?
How would he even know that he could forget something if it's his first memory?
That is a good point. Yeah.
Like he doesn't have any experience of forgetting anything. So he wouldn't even know that forgetting what's happening is even a possibility. The whole concept of what he's claiming is so dumb.
That's a good point. Yeah, if you've never had a memory before, how would you know you could forget anything? Yeah.
You've never lost a memory if it's your first one.
Yeah. Because he does say that is his first experience. He wakes up and is like, don't forget this. Don't forget this.
I mustn't forget. Also, who gives a fuck if you forget? Why is he so like worried about forgetting that? Another thing I don't get. Why does fetus Terrence Howard give a shit if he forgets that he's the memory of being in the womb? Or is there a concept he came up with in the womb that he didn't want to forget?
I think, yeah.
There's a whole nother dimension of stupid.
I think I think his first 10 patents were developed before he was even born.
Umbilical cord. What a great idea.
Imagine a cord connecting one thing to another thing.
Expandable paperclip. What the fuck?
So one thing you could say is maybe he heard people talking, but then even then it's kind of questionable how he would have woken up and immediately known language.
Yeah, it's like, did he hear someone kill someone through the belly, through the womb? Was he privy to some sort of conspiracy that he's like, I can't forget this, the people have to know?
Yeah, I don't understand. So it seems like on that one, it can't work if he can't be right if that's the way we get concepts and what concepts are. If we need
no point of reference at that moment.
Yeah. No stimulus to tell him what memories are.
No experience, yeah. No stimulus, nothing. Mm-hmm. It's such bullshit.
Okay, but that's just one theory, and some philosophers think that way of thinking is totally wrong. And
I count myself among those prestigious philosophers.
Oh, you don't agree with the empiricism? Okay, so you might like this. So one criticism of the representation theory is that it is self-defeating, and you get into this, it creates the problems it was supposed to solve. So the question is, so one way of thinking about it is like this. Okay, so if representations, this is the philosopher Michael Dummett. So you could think of representations as a kind of language, and you can think, and then you have your first language. And then maybe you learn a second language. When you learn a second language, and so the idea would be that the first language that you know is the mental representation language. Then you get your first language, and then maybe you get a second language.
Okay.
When you're learning the second language, you understand the second language by translating it back into your first language.
Mm-hmm.
At first, that's how you get to know how to use it. And then over time, if you get fluent, then it's like second nature, I guess.
So, but quick interjection here. People that are fluent in many languages, this is another thing where I'm like, do we actually think in words? Because what are they switching between languages in their thoughts? I don't know. Like, is there a primary language that they think in, and then they, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's a whole thing called linguistic determinism. And that's the idea that your language sort of constrains your thinking and your concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what language you think in, you will have different concepts and may not even be able to think about things in the same way as other people. That's a theory.
But, so in that theory, people that speak only speak Vietnamese versus people that only speak Icelandic could have completely different modes of how they view the world based on not just where they live, but how the language that they actually speak in.
That's the idea. Yeah. For example, there are some things where it seems to make sense and some things where it doesn't seem to make sense. So the Inuit famously have tons of words, different words for snow.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we only have like a couple words for snow.
Yeah.
So if you think language shapes the way you think about the world and experience it, then you might think, oh, maybe when it's like snowing out, they think about it differently because they know so many different kinds of snow.
Yeah. They probably have different words for every type of condition of snow, which is, it would make sense if your daily life is constantly dealing with fucking snow.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think then it gets crazy. I think, but and then it might be the case that we might not even notice these different kinds of snow because we don't have any name for them. So we just, for us, it's all snow. So when we go out, we just like, oh yeah, I just see snow everywhere, snow.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're going out, they're seeing one kind of snow over there, different, and they think about it different. That's one, mm-hmm. one way to think about it. I think it goes too far when people say something like, oh, they didn't see the color blue in a certain culture because we've never seen it written down or something or stuff like that.
Like they can't process the color blue without a word to associate it with.
Yeah. I've seen some weird things like that. Or like there's a line in Homer called the Wine Dark Sea. And that was, some people thought, oh, they didn't have the concept of blue back then or something.
Mm.
The ocean isn't the color of wine. What the hell is he talking about?
I mean, I'm sure under certain conditions it looks just like wine. If there's like a sunset and it's dark,
yeah,
you know, exactly. If there's a storm coming in, there's a sun setting, there's crimson mixing with the dark waves, yeah. That's definitely, I mean, come on.
Yeah. There was another anthropologist named Worf not to be confused with the lieutenant from Star Trek Next Generation.
Oh, okay.
Klingon. That's what I think when I hear Worf. I think Klingon.
I think something you put your boat next to.
Whoa. Nice.
Yeah, there's an example of how language is interpreted differently.
Yes.
Brought you up a wrinkly forehead and brought me up an oceanside scene.
Perfect. This guy, Worf, he thought that the Hopi people of the southwestern United States, the indigenous people, that they like had completely different concepts of time and experienced time completely differently based on his reading of their language. But he turned out to be using bad translations.
Ah.
So it's there's a bit of that, like with language. Like it, I think it does shape how you experience the world, but it doesn't prevent you from learning other concepts.
It might deepen your understanding of certain, like with the snow thing, right? If you're dealing with snow every day, it's beneficial to know all the different types of how it would behave and stuff. So it'd be good to have language to help communicate all the subtleties, but it's not like it couldn't be explained to someone with less words. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I don't need to know every Inuit word for snow in order to understand how snow will behave under certain conditions.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we were on to something and then we took that slight detour. What was I? Criticism of the representational theory.
Mm.
So you learn a second language, and the way you learn the second language is by translating it back into your first spoken language. But you cannot translate according to Michael Dummett, you cannot translate back from your first spoken language to this non-linguistic representational language.
Right. So once you have the words for it, that's locked in.
Well, he's arguing that if the representational theory of mind was like a language, then the way you would learn your first language would be a translation process between those two.
Right.
But that is not, we can't do that. He's saying we don't do that. We can't do that. So therefore, representational theory doesn't work.
Checkmate.
Yeah. So he's like, for example, when you go from language one to language two, you already have the concept in language one. So you can acquire it from language two.
Right.
But if concepts are language, then how do you get the concept in the first place if you can't translate it from your representational theory? If you have the concept in the representational theory, then you don't need the language.
Right.
So he proposes the alternative, which is that concepts are like abilities. So here's a quote from him. There is really no sense to speaking of a concept coming into someone's mind. All we can think of is some image coming to mind, which we take as in some way representing the concept. And this gets us no further forward, since we still have to ask, since we still have to ask in what is associating that concept with that image consists.
Right. It's like the get in the bottle water thing we were talking about last week.
Yeah. So he's saying the representation is no better than the word because you still need to explain how you know what it means.
Right. So, and we can't do that.
That's what he's saying. You can't do that if you need a language to get concepts, then you're in this recursive loop.
See, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Okay. So
was I not talking about that last week? I'm like lost on what my argument was last week, if I even had one.
I can't remember exactly, but I think we were kind of...
My old thing was you don't need language to have ideas.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And that's like... that confused me because in philosophy terms, ideas are part of representational theory of mind, which is kind of like a language.
Oh.
But then that's why Michael Dummett comes along and is gives us the alternative option where it's not an idea, it's an ability. And I think that's more what you were thinking, because it's not a language, it's more of like an ability, concepts of an ability. Yeah. Okay, so concepts as an ability is different from concepts as a representation. So the ability view is that instead of thinking as concepts as something that has meaning, it's more like something that we do or that we can do. It's more like knowledge how rather than knowledge of. If that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think I can maybe understand kind of what you're saying.
Isn't that what your sort of intuition
is? I think so.
What was your intuition?
Well, the whole thing was I thought that if I would keep going back to the example of being thirsty and going and getting a drink of water. I never felt like I needed to put that into words in order for that action to be triggered, right? So the idea of the stimulus of being thirsty and then thinking of where to get to like quench my thirst and how to do it doesn't need to be put into language for me to launch that expedition.
Right. And what do you need? What do you need to know how to do?
So what you would need to know is you would need to know that water is how you quench thirst. First of all, I would need to know that I need to leave where I am to go get water. I need to know where the water is, and I would need to know how to put it into my body in order to quench the thirst.
Right.
And yeah. I need to know what water is.
You need to know, you need to be able to distinguish water from like not water.
Yes. Yeah. I don't need to know what its like molecular makeup is or anything. I just need to know that that is how you get rid of thirst.
Yeah.
I don't even have to know why I need to get rid of thirst. I just have to know that's how to get rid of it, because thirst is a discomfort.
You just don't like it. You want to get rid of it. Yeah. Yeah. And you can imagine that like all of those things are, you don't need to be thinking of that stuff. You just need to know how to do it.
Yeah. I just need to know this is what has to happen for this thing to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's like Michael Dummett's theory. It's not explained in a lot of detail on the Stanford Encyclopedia. But it is interesting. And it seems more of like more amenable to the thing that will help Terrence Howard the most, which is called nativism about concepts.
Okay. Explain.
So nativism about concepts is the idea that we can have innate concepts independent of experience. And this is most famously from Noam Chomsky.
Ooh, I've heard of him.
Yeah. So his most famous argument was called the poverty of the stimulus argument, which is that human beings are able to learn language as well as they need to, fully fluent in a native language, despite the fact that they only ever encounter a small fraction of the actual structure of their language when they're children.
Hmm.
And so his solution to this was that there must be innate dispositions that can acquire language, maybe like an innate grammar.
Huh.
Chomsky called it universal grammar. Everyone has a universal grammar innately in their brain. And when it's exposed to language, it can acquire it, even though it doesn't have enough. It's like a learning algorithm. Right. You just have to give it a little bit and it can work with that.
But isn't it documented that after a certain point, if someone hasn't been exposed to language, they won't be able to learn it?
Correct.
That's interesting.
That's true. It hasn't been studied a lot, obviously, for ethical reasons.
Yeah.
I think everyone they find who was raised in isolation without language can't learn it.
Right.
Or
is it that they're just, they've learned a different type of language that is like a big block to learning spoken language?
Ah.
Like, say, the Raised by Wolves thing, you know?
Yeah.
There's been some examples of that actually happening in real life. And the person who was raised by wolves seemed to have no problem communicating with other wolves. So it's not like there was I guess it would depend on your description or definition of what a language is, but like, do you think animals have language?
100%. Yeah,
they do. Okay. So you would admit that, you'd have to say that, okay, this person learned the language of the wolves. It's not like they didn't acquire any language, but isolation though. That's not what we're kind of, that's not the, they've never had any other entity to communicate with.
Yeah.
That's a whole different thing.
Yeah. That's interesting. They can't acquire like a spoken human language, but that's a good point that they seem to have acquired other communication abilities.
Yes. Which could be a lot more complex and subtle than we would even realize, right?
Yeah, well, don't they say like more than half of human communication is nonverbal?
They say that, but I don't know who they are, and I don't know where that comes from. A lot of these old, I feel like a lot of these sayings came from like one shitty study years ago that made a headline.
That's funny. That's interesting.
But I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if it was a large report, like a pretty big chunk, because you can really tell what someone's thinking or feeling as far as like the emotions attached to it just by looking at them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can tell like people, we have all sorts of gestures that communicate things like, yes, we have gestures for yes, we have gestures for no.
Sentence can be spoken in a bunch of different inflections with different facial expressions and be taken just as many different ways as what they're meaning.
Yeah. You can communicate a lot about your intentions with like a look or a facial expression. Yeah. So maybe that's part of the universal grammar. Maybe he's right. And when people's universal grammar just latches on to whatever the communication is that they need to acquire. And then once that's acquired, like you said, there's no room left to learn anything else. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Well, think about animals I feel like animals have a more, a wider spectrum as far as like what an angry person versus a sad person looks like. Their face, like we can pick that up, the subtle differences between the two, but like animals have extra things, like they can really bare their teeth, like so it takes up a huge portion of their head, right? Like a dog growling is a very intimidating thing because a bunch of things are happening with the teeth showing the sound, but they also have their ears going back and their hair standing on edge. Like they have a lot more, like they can display their intention with a lot more ferocity than I think like some other animals, maybe even humans.
Yeah, that's a good point. And they also have ways to communicate that they don't pose a threat.
Yes.
And all sorts of things.
Right. Wagging a tail, ears up.
Yeah, the bowing.
Belly exposed.
Yeah. And there is like a whole scientific project right now that's trying to translate whale songs and then play them back to the whales and have conversations with them and stuff.
Dave Kopp has a very funny whale singing whale joke right now, which I don't want to butcher, but it's really fucking funny.
Nice. So anyway, all of this is to say that if universal grammar is true, then Terrence Howard, this little baby Terrence, has a universal grammar, and that universal grammar is able to listen to everything his parents were saying all the time. And because he's super genius baby, his universal grammar is just much, much faster than ours.
Much more, much more detailed. He could get. He was basically understanding English just on the inflection and tone of the words being spoken.
Yes, even before he attained consciousness, his universal grammar was processing everything that all the sound waves and stuff that were going into his brain were being processed and decoded and re-encoded and.
But I mean, I could, okay, if I'm being extremely generous to Mr. Howard, he when he became conscious in the womb, he had an innate, just he was able to understand that some sounds mean good, some sounds mean bad. Maybe he had an incredibly unique ability to pick up the gist of conversations that are going on outside of the womb, right? As far as like, is a good thing happening? Is the conversation about, you know, just business as usual? Is it, is someone saying they love someone? Is someone getting mad? Like maybe they could, even if he was able to just like sort all those things while he's in the womb, that still wouldn't explain the concept of forgetting a memory. Like, I don't think any universal grammar I don't think there's a universal grammar about forgetting.
Well, here's the thing. He doesn't need to have the word for forgetting, because before he gets the word, he learns how to use the concept of memory as an ability.
How? If it's his first memory, how?
He is an extremely fast learner. And he...
So he becomes conscious, realizes that memories actually get stored. And then he also realizes that they can be forgotten all within an instant.
Yes. And the good memories, you don't want to forget. You want to hold on to them.
Why he would want to remember being stuck in the womb, I don't know.
And so when he's saying, don't forget this, don't forget this, he's trying to teach himself how to remember. To develop the ability.
Right. So he already knows right away that he's going to forget this if he doesn't say repeat that notion over to himself. Yes. I mean, also indicate that he knows that repetition is how you solidify memory.
Yeah, I mean, he may have heard his mom like trying to remember a phone number. Right? Uh-huh. Don't forget this number. Don't forget this number. And then, so he has a universal grammar. He picks up that language, and then when he becomes conscious, he's got these words that he knows how to use. But he didn't have to learn a prior language through experience to arrive at those concepts.
I just feel like if there was a human being that was born with that level of like innate knowledge or grammar or whatever, intuition, you would become like a fucking Isaac Newton type guy. You wouldn't become the guy they fired from Iron Man. You know what I mean? Like if you have that ability, I almost like you would have had an impact, a huge impact on society, even if you weren't pursuing it, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, he has, he's had an impact in virtue of how crazy he sounds.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a cultural impact briefly.
Well, what are his patents? Maybe they're too powerful and the world isn't ready.
Well, that's exactly what he would say. I wonder if there's a list of Terrence Howard's patents. Let's see. Terrence Howard's, we'll say best patents.
Most profitable.
Yeah. I just want one example. Okay, here's... what has Terrence Howard invented? Okay. He had formulated his own language of logic, which he called teriology.
He's doing the exact same thing we are. He's trying to figure out what is the language of thought.
I'm not claiming to figuring it out, though.
Teriology.
This is what this genius has named it.
What's his theory of language?
Trying to look up if he has anything that
Feasibility analysis of patent is okay. Technical feasibility. This patent outlines a modular approach allowing geometric shapes to be combined in various configurations, which is technically feasible with existing manufacturing design technologies. Application. Educational kits for geometry and physics. Modular drones. Okay, so he thinks he's come up with some new way of, like, flight. I know that.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm
just saying his impact on society has been very, very minimal based on how the potential it should have had if he had these abilities.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's safe to say he's not as big of a genius as he actually is.
Yeah. But if he's a genius, he's a pretty much a useless one, which is even worse.
Well, his genius is in his ability to just like skip ahead years in terms of conceptual felicity.
I mean, I definitely think that people can have insights on actual, you know, say some high concept physical, like physics notion. I think people can have insights on like that, like, you know, time and space are connected or stuff like that. Like, I think people can have insights about that, but that's totally different than actually understanding the nuances of it.
Yeah. But it seems like it is maybe possible. Like, seems extremely unlikely, but it seems possible, according to at least some of these theories, that you could have a baby that understood what memory was.
I don't think it does.
It would be a very precocious baby, but
imagine your baby bringing up something that happened when it was one day old to you.
It is like the Dune baby. Super creepy.
Yeah, the Dune. That's exactly what it is. We're literally talking about the baby from Dune 2.
Yeah, and I think that is hypothetically possible, right? Like, the Dune baby drinks this concoction that's supposed to, like, unlock its consciousness.
Well, what it does is it acquires the memories of all the matron mothers before it, right?
Oh, so it doesn't really tell you at all about how the baby...
Unless there's such thing as genetic memory, right?
Yeah, you get the genetic, like, we know the baby gets the genetic memories from the parents, but it doesn't tell us how the parents got the acquired language and concepts.
No, but so this in Terrence, like, Howard's situation, yeah, maybe he has such strong genetic memory that these concepts of not forgetting and stuff were he acquired that knowledge from his parents already knowing it and their parents knowing it. And it's just that genetic, that understanding was so thick in his genetic soup that he immediately understood it when he became conscious.
Yeah. He's like a spider that knows how to make a web right after it hatches.
Exactly. Terrence Howard is a spider. Spider-Man confirmed. Terrence Howard is going to be Spider-Man. I think we just figured that out.
I think he's a little old. Peter Parker is a high schooler.
They always do a version where the guy's old though. Logan.
I thought you were just going to say they're just going to cast him as a high schooler.
He'd probably be like, I looked that young.
Oh, well, no, that is, I guess Beyond the Spider-Verse is all about like older Spider-Mans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent films. But yeah, I don't think Terrence Howard is a genius. I think he is someone that has learnt a lot of, let's say, verbiage. He's learned a lot of smart sounding words and how to string them together, but I don't think he understands what he's actually saying. In fact, there was a whole bunch of people on TikTok that were like astrophysicists and scientists that went through his Joe Rogan interview and just gave quick examples of him spouting off a word soup of smart sounding words that do have meanings, but the way he was linking them together made no sense.
Yeah. He's got ChatGPT feeding him answers.
Oh yeah. He probably invented ChatGPT actually.
Goddamn.
Okay, well, that's our episode. Do you have anything you want to tie this up with a bow?
Yes, there's a growing, it seems like there's a movement in philosophy to try and combine these different ideas of concepts. Maybe everyone's right.
Well, okay, that's good. Everybody's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can just assume right now that my unborn child is doing high level theoretical physics in the womb. That's what I'm going to assume.
Well, as long as you don't become the reverend mother of a Fremen tribe, should be okay.
I'll try.
As long as Chelsea doesn't, rather.
All right, right. Okay. Chelsea's not religious.
Not a member of the Bene Gesserit.
No. Not that you would tell me anyways. Oh, my God. Now that I think back. She used to have brown eyes, but now they're blue. Okay, that's our episode. Talk to you later.
See ya.